Hey innovators, this is Phil Swanson with Whirlpool Corporation. I wanted to share a couple things that we've learned this year and a couple things we're really looking forward to in 2020, as well as some personal insights with some interactions I've had in the innovation community throughout 2019. I think the biggest thing that we're proud of, or I'm proud of our organization during 2019, is the growth that we've had. We're about a year and a half into the current iteration of our Advanced Development Innovation Group, and we've seen a lot of growth in terms of our capabilities, our ability to work as dedicated autonomous teams. And what I shared earlier in the year around how we're structured, we're really making strides and commitments and to double down on that effort here coming into 2020. Because we're seeing the results, we're seeing how our small, empowered, agile teams really driving change in the products that they get to own and the services that they get to own. And the ability for that team to say, hey, this thing isn't working right. On top of that, we have a new leader coming that's come in about 6 months in and really reinvigorated the organization, aligned to those the same values. And so we're really excited about pushing that forward in 2020 and really committing to that ethos and driving that inside of our organization and the wider Whirlpool. On top of that, what I'm really excited about is connecting the different innovation hotspots in our organization. So I know this happens at a lot of large corporates. Even if you do have an organization that's dedicated to innovation, you're going to have pockets pop up. And so we're really excited about connecting all those different activities and seeing, hey, how do we drive alignment and how do we capitalize on sharing resources, knowledge, best practices, and things of that nature. But on top of that, taking that ethos of, hey, how do we connect internally? What I'm really proud of is how we've been able to connect externally with startups and other early stage organizations that aren't our traditional supplier portfolio through an organization called the Seamless Consortium. And this started out with the idea that maybe we could have a corporate accelerator in the Grand Rapids area. And that worked out with the first two classes. Whirlpool wasn't a part of it, but those non-competing corporates in different verticals took a step back and said, hey, maybe the accelerator isn't, or a traditional accelerator isn't what we need to do here in Grand Rapids. It doesn't help solve the problems we're looking to solve. So the organization took a step back and said, hey, what if we actually just created the middleware for corporate innovation when they're trying to work with startups? So these seven corporates essentially pooled their resources, had tech scouts globally in hotspots of innovation. So Tel Aviv, Hong Kong, San Francisco, Boston, and a couple of other areas. And so they have these dedicated scouts feeding startups into the consortium that are then vetted every 2 weeks through all the partner members in a biweekly meeting. But more importantly, what comes out of that is shared resources across scouting, but also for proof of concepts. So if something comes in, it's really interesting to more than one of the companies, and it should be, and that's what the scouts are tasked with. Is providing companies that could have value more than one vertical. So let's say a healthcare company, a consumer goods company, and maybe ourselves, Whirlpool, want to go in and approve a concept of the company. We can start essentially modeling that proof of concept around one company taking a lead and everyone sharing in the cost. And really what's happened is the best startups in the world have a lot more pull, and that power dynamic has changed. And so they're working with everybody. All the best companies in the world are talking to these startups. So why would they pay attention to just one of us? Well, those tables turn when you have 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 companies coming to the table saying, hey, we'd like to work with you, or we're interested in having a conversation about your technology. Immediately that startup's ears perk up, because maybe they haven't quite found product market fit. Maybe they're trying to figure out what other verticals can they scale this technology into, or scale their solution into. And so having that audience of multiple non-competing sectors where the value could be different, but each could utilize the core technology, is a really, really strong value proposition for these companies. And so what we've seen is through the iterations and the POCs that we're running, these companies are figuring out how to get product market fit, but also it allows us to come back to our organizations with much more tangible results than simply saying, hey, we found this handful of startups, we think they're cool, we've had a couple conversations with them, here's some decks. And then done due diligence without ever working with a group. So now, having worked with an organization or with a startup, understand how those team dynamics work over a POC that lasts maybe 12 weeks at the short end, or 8 to 12 weeks at the short end. And at the long end, we have a couple year-long engagements that have been really transformational as well. And so what we've really learned through that is obviously how to accelerate interactions between startups and corporates, and de-risking those interactions across non-competing verticals But what else has happened is the sharing of knowledge through the corporates and the other enterprises, much like what happens here at Innovators, has really been the key value proposition. And then how we can interact and engage with the community. You know, it allows us to bring May Mobility, which is one of the larger autonomous shuttle startups in the country and the world, to come and install the longest autonomous shuttle route in the country in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They serviced more customers and run more autonomous miles than anybody else in the world at this point with actual customers, which is awesome. So those are the type of opportunities that we've really been able to realize with the consortium, but also more, and you know, more selfishly for Whirlpool, we get to see a technology vetted through 7 different eyes than just ourselves. So maybe we don't see a use case right now, but someone else does, and we can stay tuned into how that technology evolves and how those potential use cases are panning out, which eventually may come back around to say, hey, this is something that we see aligns with our strategy. More importantly, some of the trends that I'm seeing or that we've seen in corporate innovation for 2020 and beyond, again, falls into that ecosystem mentality. We've for so long, we have these large, huge problems that are going to be affecting humanity and our internal organizations. And what do those macro trends mean for us? And when you're talking with other people like, other companies from Innovators, or you have a forum like Seamless where we're constantly meeting with other organizations that are worried and considering all of these changes every 2 weeks, you really see that we're not alone in this. And that working together is really the only way we're going to solve some of these really big problems, whether it be the housing, a housing crisis, or the moving from urban or from suburban to urban living, and all these other macro trends, in terms of, less children being born in the United States, people are remaining single longer, housing, student debt, all these things that that are affecting our large consumer organizations and healthcare and, health insurance. And automotive, and having all of those perspectives in a room every 2 weeks is really valuable. And my perspective on that is the more that our organizations can start tapping into external sources, not just suppliers, but think tanks and other things like that, and have meaningful conversations, and not necessarily let our guard down, but understand that in this modern day and age, IP is important, but really execution is what matters. Now, if you have IP that can block people out, that's great. But really what's going to matter is you owning the connection with the consumer and building that network and that ecosystem, fundamentally understanding what's different about this product or service. And more than that is, I think that is going to enable a shift towards business model innovation and disruption that we're starting to see the outcomes of. Obviously, Uber and others, the service economies like that, are transforming into this subscription. The idea that I just want access, not necessarily ownership, and that's only going to accelerate. But there's going to be a ton of other business models that are going to evolve out of what the internet has done, essentially to all forms of value exchange. So I'm really excited to see that in 2020 and beyond. But really, that big trend for 2020 is how do we better work together and share information, and sometimes let down our guard, but open up our walls in more meaningful ways than we have before. Also, in terms of that, I think there's this larger piece around sustainability. We've seen a big uptick here in corporate responsibility, CEOs signing large letters of intent saying, hey, this is what we're going to commit to in terms of helping and being great stewards of the environment. I think, too, that sharing amongst companies, but also sharing into the community and understanding what our businesses do and how they impact people and the world at large and our actual environment, is going to be something that isn't just a piece of paper that we write and agree to. It's going to have to see tangible results. Purpose-built brands, purpose-built organizations are really going to be that defining, I think, corporate model moving into the next century. And so who really is going to capture that value and become more than just a sustainable brand or a purpose-driven organization in name? All right, it's going to be in function and what you do and what you live and what your values are, and getting away a little bit from this shareholder above all else mentality. I think that is going to have to change if we're really going to start seeing some of these long-term plays and if we really want to hold people at the heart of our innovations. And then final message I think to everybody is along those lines of corporate innovation is hard. Innovation is hard. And the more I talk to innovators across companies and entrepreneurs and work with startups, it becomes really apparent that this is not an easy thing. And I think all the people involved, this is why we like doing this, right? Maintaining the business is great. You know, growing a business is great. That's already there. But how do you define new business opportunities? Understanding consumer needs before anybody else, iterating towards a goal, failing and sharing that knowledge and having the humility to understand that innovation and new product and new service development, new business models are very tough to come by. And that we're very rarely going to be right. And that word humility I used, Ben Look, who leads the innovation group at Trinity Health Systems, which is a $20 billion health system organization in North America. And they're one of the largest health system providers in Michigan, used that word humility the other day. And he said, when someone asked, you know, what does innovation mean to you? And what does corporate innovation mean to you? And he said, humility. And what Ben was talking about, what he mentioned is being able to admit that we're not right. We have assumptions, or being able to say, hey, we learned something and then change and pivot. That's something that we're not necessarily traditionally taught in business school. We're taught to have plans and be deciders and be able to predict growth for the next 24 to 36 months. And when things don't pan out, that hurts us, right? That breeds anxiety, thinks we're, you know, less of ourselves, a lack of fulfillment. But really, when we're working on this innovation side, you have to have that humility to know that what I'm proposing is potentially wrong, and that all of the work I'm doing is to, you know, essentially close knowledge gaps, but essentially build certainty or reduce the uncertainty around a business opportunity, a new innovation, a technology. And then understanding that we might hit a dead end, and we might have to pivot, and we might have to kill something, and we might have to move on to the next opportunity. But having the humility to know when to do that and be proud of those facts, and then have an organization that supports and is proud of those things as well, is tough. And I don't think our corporate organizations are ambidextrous in that nature of how do I maintain the current business and also provide the space and the mentorship and the servant leadership to allow people and organizations to fail, and have the humility as leaders to say, hey, that's okay, and this is how I'm going to manage the business. And that really becomes quite difficult. Well, again, you know, I'd like to thank everybody. I'm taking a couple minutes here in the evening here from my personal studio in Kalamazoo. So you're not going to see any Whirlpool stuff out here. This is just, you know, my little chop shop, so to speak. But anyway, hope everything's going well. And if you guys have any questions or anything you want to follow up with, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always available.